Hustle 2 was the most boring show I've ever watched. The thing is, the thing with Hustle 1, the thing with Hustle in general is that the actual matches aren't very good, so you need some of the wackiness, some of the just dumbness, otherwise it's just a boring show. And
I'm kind of watching these alongside a lot of New Japan shows, and the standard of wrestling on Hustle is actually better than it is on New Japan from the same
time. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But you have to remember 2004 was not a good time for Japanese wrestling. Noah was great, but that was it.
Right. Yeah, because 2004 would be like the Inokism time for...
Yeah, like to start, that started like start of the century. So like, I don't want to say that I stopped watching New Japan altogether around 2002. And I don't feel like I missed much. So I've been watching the New Japan shows from 2004 and they've all been dog shit.
Right. Yeah, but again, they're wacky at least.
Yeah, but one of the things from that is that they pushed Bob Sapp really hard. Bob Sapp would have been a fantastic fit for Hustle because he was all personality. He would have fitted so well into this period of like early Hustle when they needed a big star name to carry the action. He would have been perfect, but like he was in New Japan, who they really shouldn't have used him because he didn't fit in at all.
Yeah, but he was a massive money draw, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, fair enough. Yeah, he sucked, but if he's drawing you tons and tons of money, just go with it. Why not?
Yeah, I feel like that was a detriment to New Japan around the time because they should have been pushing actual talented guys, and Sapp was in the way. He wasn't in the way for a long time, but then even when... he wasn't there, they still pushed like really bad wrestlers around this time period. It was like Nagata had a good run, and then you've got to wait for Tanahashi, and there's nothing in between.
Right. So it's not just that Hustle was bad. If anything, Hustle was better than, other than Noah, what was going on in Japan in general.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't watching a lot of Japanese wrestling because I wasn't getting recommendations for stuff. Like, nothing was coming through. Yeah, so right, like, North America was really good at the time. So you had, like, Ring of Honor was really good. PWG. Even, like, IWA Mid-South was doing good stuff. That all their best shows are from this time period.
Yeah, I think... I want to say this is around the time CZW was still doing some, like, cool cruiserweight stuff in the undercards.
Pretty much all of the North American promotions were good around this time. So Japan, it was like, I watched Noah. I watched most of the Noah shows from this era. But everything else, yeah. Like I said, I watched... So Hustle at the time, I watched the first four shows.
Right.
When they happened. And then after that, I stopped. They were hard to get a hold of. And I didn't feel like it was worth... tracking them down, but my favorite show I think from the first four is Hustle 3.
Hustle 3 is really fun.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about 2? We'll kind of do 2 quickly and then move on to 3, I think.
Yeah, let me hold on. What was on 3? I liked the opener. I liked, actually, no, I didn't. I'm wrong about that. The Key Homicide Spanky. My issue with that was Homicide just really doesn't fit in just Japanese wrestling in general.
Yeah.
He's like a brawling charisma machine, and putting him in...
This was like his only match. Like, they brought him in for this match, and he didn't really fit in, so they didn't use him again.
Yeah, you have to assume it was a favour to Loki or something.
Yeah, I assume it was like, Loki, you need a tag team partner, who do you want to tag with? And it was like, well, tag with Homicide.
Yeah, because he, on Hustle 3, he tags with someone else.
Yeah, they basically do the same match again, but instead of Homicide, it's Takamishinoku.
Yeah, which was a so much better team.
Yeah, it was a better match.
Other than that, I mean, Carino CW Anderson was,
yeah.
I thought it
come down too hard on CW, but like he was never a great singles wrestler. Like he was better as part of a stable and doing tags and stuff. So having him in there, it's just Carino like wanted to have a match with his mate, and it just wasn't very good.
Yeah, I started the match thinking CW was a bit underrated because, like, he's still going today and he's still solid. But I think that's about as high as he can get.
Yeah, he's a solid hand. He always has been. I'm not going to, like, slag off CW Anderson because I always thought he was good. But this just isn't the spot for him. If he'd been tagging with Carino against two other guys, that probably would have been fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a shame they just did a normal singles match. Let's see. After that was Kojima Otani against Dusty and Dusty Jr. Dustin,
yeah. I don't know why they called him Dusty Jr. That was just weird.
I imagine, I don't know actually. Maybe they think Dusty is such a big star that calling his son Dusty Jr. makes him feel bigger than just...
Yeah, I mean, like, he'd been a star in his own right at that point, though. This is, like, way after his peak WWF run, which was, like, mid-90s.
That's true, actually.
So, like, he would have been quite a big star at that
but point. But had he hadn't really worked in Japan much, had he?
I wouldn't have thought so, because he went from NWA to... So hang on, let me pull up his history here.
Because even last episode, we found out Dusty had done a reasonable amount in Japan.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm thinking very little. He's got a couple of credits for New Japan, but that was due to the WCW link. So he kind of came in when... It was tail end of NWA as like the natural.
Right.
And then he actually did a couple of All Japan tours. So he had a couple of All Japan tours at the end of the 80s. He tagged with his dad in the WWF for a little bit. And then he went back to WCW. Then he was Goldust. And... as far as Japan goes, that's about it.
Yeah, so he was a star in North America, but really in Japan, he'd only done a couple of Japan tours.
It does kind of cross over because there is a market for WWF in Japan and WCW. But I don't know. They must have just thought the only value in him there was Dusty Jr., which is... weird, because like he'd had his big run, he had a huge run. Maybe he was just trying to get away from the gimmick, because he kind of had done that and then gone back to WWE again and done a second Goldust run right before this. So maybe he was just trying to shed the gimmick, which is what he did sort of 2000 when he went back to WCW after the first Goldust run. So
that's maybe, but what he would have gone to TNA not long after this, and he did a sort of evil Goldust character, Black Rain. So I don't know if that's the reason, but it could be.
Yeah, I mean, we're just speculating. It's just
yeah, of course.
It's weird that he did this. Plus, he had he had like a Texas flag painted on his face, so it wasn't like he was completely avoiding the gimmick. He was still doing the gimmick, but the gimmick was so straight-laced.
Yeah, the face paint looked really bad. You know, this was the match where I realized a lot of the gaijin on the show so far didn't really know how to work Japan. Because Dustin especially, he was like trying to jeer up the crowd. He was doing like southern-style wrestling, which doesn't really work for that kind of a crowd.
He hadn't done a lot. So apart from that, a couple of tours with All Japan, which is a long time before this. And he was basically tagging with Harley Race.
Wow.
Harley Race, Tom Zenk, and Pete Roberts.
I'm not convinced I know who Tom Zenk and Pete Roberts are.
Tom Zenk, the Z-Man.
Okay.
And Pete Roberts was Super Destroyer. These
I know Super Destroyer.
Super Destroyer. Yeah, he retired not long after that.
Right.
So yeah, that's his history. So like he was always tagging with somebody with more experience. So he probably didn't know what he was doing.
I'm just going to run down the card if there's anything else worth talking about.
Not really. There is. Well, the match after that is the Riki Choshu and Ishii against Naohiro Hoshikawa and Zebraman. So I kind of want to talk about this a little bit because it's weird for two reasons. This is the start of them pushing Riki Choshu as this guy who just like squashes people, which is like prime comedy for the Japanese audiences because he was just killing people. And the crowd, I don't know if you can hear it on two, but especially on three, because he's got a squash match on three, they're just laughing. They find it hilarious that Riki Choshu is taking this shit seriously, which he is. He's the only person that takes this seriously out of the big stars. Nobody else does. And the crowd are just eating it up because it's like Riki Choshu's in a comedy match, but he doesn't know he's in a comedy match.
It didn't land with me. I didn't understand that's what was going on.
But it becomes more apparent as like time passes. So like it's not as apparent here when he's just battering Zebra Man. But like the next show, I can't even remember who he wrestles at Hustle 3, but he has a squash match at Hustle 3 and the crowd, you can hear them laughing.
Yeah, I remember that match on... It was King Adamo on Hustle 3. I remember that as well. And I heard the crowd laughing, but it still didn't. I still didn't get that's what was going on.
Yeah, that's what's happening. He's in a comedy match, but he's not aware he's in a comedy match. And that's what he's making it funny for the crowd.
That's genius.
It's basically the whole thing is just a rib on Riki Choshu and how seriously he takes himself, which... That's a lot of what Hustle is about is taking people who take themselves too seriously and just taking the piss out of them.
Okay. Sorry, I have an old WWF show on in the background and they just showed an advert for the Scientology book. I'm so confused. That's the weirdest thing. Sorry.
So that was Joshu's side of things. And the other side of it is Zebra Man. So we talked a lot about Zebra Man on about Hustle 1. But like on Hustle 2, he's gone from a guy who they were pushing as like mysterious and exciting to he's just a complete scrub. And
he didn't even get an entrance. He was already in the ring.
I don't know what happened between 1 and 2, but they've gone from this is our Undertaker to he's a jobber. Which is quite the downward trajectory.
I honestly think it is on Hustle 1 they realised how bad he is as a worker and just gave up on it. Because, again, I know it's the tie-in with the movie, but they can't have been making that much off the movie.
I'm guessing nothing.
Because even on Hustle 3... He gets a bit more of a vignette, but then he's just sort of squashed.
It's squashed. Yeah, we'll talk about that. There's some excellent Zebra Man content on Hustle 3. But Hustle 2, yes. Less. So he's basically a punchline.
Yeah. Ishii with hair looks really weird. I don't like it. There's certain people that just... Different. Yeah, no, I don't know. It felt weird. Some people don't look better bald, And I think Ishii's one of those
Yeah,
people.
it's not as weird as seeing Yoshitatsu as a rookie, because I've been watching these New Japan shows from 2004. So like Yoshitatsu's there as a rookie and he's bald. And that's just wrong.
Yeah, no, that doesn't seem right. Yeah, I've seen a couple of pictures. It's too weird. After that, we had the FMW offer match.
Yeah. This match almost derailed my entire Hustle program, because we were talking about it with who was I talking to? It was Wabs and Alex and someone else. We were talking about doing this Hustle project, and I basically had refused to do something else because Just Incredible was in it. I think it was Alex said Just Incredible's gonna be is in like Hustle 2, and I was like, fuck. I almost abandoned the whole thing just because I had to watch Just Incredible wrestle. But it was early on, and he's only here once, and they don't use him again, so it's fine.
And I mean, for me at least, this was like the best match on the card, just because it brought some energy to a very, very boring show.
Yeah, this is like my second favorite match on the card, but it's pretty high up.
Yeah,
They lost points for having Just Incredible in the match.
although he didn't, I don't remember him doing much.
He botched the finish
Yeah, he did.
because they were going to do like a counter to That's Incredible, and like he was supposed to get smacked in the mouth with the like Tanaka's rolling elbow. And he just fucked the whole thing up and just collapsed. And it was just like, oh, what happens now? And they just kind of get back up, do like a ducked clothesline or something, and then he got smacked in the face, and that was it. That was the end of the match.
Yeah, fucking just incredible.
Just incompetent.
Just after this, we had the most important moment of the entire show. We had a backstage segment with Ogawa, where he kicked some chicken that was lying on the floor, and he was wearing a shirt that said "I'm Chicken."
He's kicking himself.
Yeah, this brought up a lot of existential
Yeah,
questions for
he's
me.
beating himself up for his own personal failings.
Yeah, I didn't. It was. Wait, is that what it's supposed to be? Does that make
I'm
sense?
inserting the narrative myself there, but that's how I feel about it, because he sits down at the table afterwards and looks really disappointed.
Because I'm not even joking with you. I spent like 5 minutes thinking about that segment, trying to figure out what the point was. And is if he's chicken and he's kicking chicken, is that self-harm? But your point makes more sense.
Yeah. I'm reading between all of the lines there. But
You
that
know,
was my point.
there must be someone that's like translated some of these promos. Because I'd like to know what's really going on.
I'm happier with my own interpretation of things, but there I could ask Mort if he'd look into it, because Mort can actually speak Japanese.
It might be worth, but equally, it's more fun not really knowing what's
Yeah,
going on.
we're gonna just take some wild shots in the dark. I like that you've also skipped over the Hustle Divas bit. This is my favorite Hustle Divas parade. Because they have to walk down the steps to get to the arena, and the first girl to walk down it just falls straight down the
I'm not going to lie to you, I skipped the Hustle Divas.
steps. It's just the way that it happens. It's like the first one walks down and she just falls, and then I'm looking at it thinking, hang on, this is the we watched the Samurai TV version. They left that in the TV broadcast. They could have easily have clipped that out.
Maybe it was part of the joke.
I believe so. Yeah, I don't think it was a deliberate fall, but them leaving it in was deliberate. And it was the whole thing is basically a shot at women's depiction in American wrestling. And Hustle is
Yeah.
basically a gag promotion to take shots at like WWE at the time. So that's what we got. The match after that was Dan Bobbish versus the Predator, so we can just skip that.
Yeah, Bobbish is, he reminds me of like a fake Ivan Koloff.
I just didn't enjoy him. I don't like Bobbish as a wrestler, and the Predator is Sylvester Turkay, and he stinks. So
yeah, it was a very bad match. That's all we need to say.
Yeah. The match after that is actually my favourite match on the show. It was the Kevin Randleman and Mark Coleman against Shinya Hashimoto and Toshiaki Kawada. And this is simply because it was like having Hashimoto and Kawada tagged together. I just, as soon as they walked out, I was like, oh, this is this is my tag team. I'm very excited to see them.
Yeah, it's a real super team. And I mean, Randleman and Coleman were really fun in this as well.
Yeah,
I think they're perfect in the sort of in a tag team against some veterans, because Randleman can come in and do his sort of flashy stuff, and you've got the veterans in there to sort of structure it all and make it all make sense. Because this was almost like a southern tag.
Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed it, and the best part of this is that it's got, if you go on Cage Match, it's got the little recommended thing next to this match. So I was like, I clicked on that. Let's go and see what other recommended matches there are for Hustle, to see what we've got coming up to look forward to. This is the only match in Hustle's match guide. It's the only one.
Really?
Yep.
I mean, that, I
this is the peak of their in-ring abilities is here.
I mean, I disagree with that. But
I assume nobody was watching for the rest of the show, so like you're not going to see a lot of recommended matches. But I thought it was weird. This is literally the only one that's in there.
It must just be because you've got Hashimoto and Kawada, so people at the time were just like, "Oh, let's go watch this."
Yeah, well, Meltzer watched like the first four shows, I guess. So he rated this at 3.5 stars, and that's how it's in the match guide. But like just about everyone else in the West, he basically stopped watching after the first few because they weren't drawing as many fans. There wasn't as much to get excited about. So, yeah.
It's a shame. It'll be interesting to see if there's anything.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see sort of Hustle 5 and see where it goes from there, because I watched the first four before, so I know where we're going. But like after that, it's kind of like a dark road at night. You don't know what's coming up.
I've never heard that expression before.
It's the end of Terminator 2, mate.
Ah, I see.
But the idea is that like if you haven't got your headlights on, you don't know what's coming. So we might be about to hit a deer.
Oh, fun. Speaking of hitting a deer, we've got the Ogawa match.
Oh, God. Oh, this is terrible. Matt Gaffari is the worst wrestler I've ever seen.
I don't understand what this match was supposed to be, because
Right, so I don't think it was originally supposed to be Gaffari in this match. I think it was supposed to be someone else, and the booking fell through. So they ended up having to do like a match against somebody who had like the Inokiism, the amateur history. So Matt Gaffari was born in Iran, but he was a US Olympian. So right. He'd been to the Olympics. Matt Gaffari had he had a brief MMA career, which was fighting Ogawa once. So Ogawa beat Gaffari. That's Matt Gaffari's only MMA match. So I guess they were trying to do like a revenge theme, but he's not a wrestler. Like he's not a wrestler at all. And
right.
Also he's horribly out of shape.
Yeah, that was my one note from this match. How out of shape he looks.
It's unbelievably out of shape. He looks like he's been sat on the couch eating potato chips and watching reruns of Roseanne for 6 months. He hasn't looked like he's been anywhere near a gym. Like he's just in horrible shape. and he doesn't do anything in the match. They just have all the heels pile in and beat up Ogawa, and then like he's supposed to do a splash at the end. He doesn't even do that right.
No, it was really bad. I think knowing that he's not really a wrestler explains how overbooked this match was, because like Ogawa's barely a wrestler as well, so you can't have your main event be two non-wrestlers.
I'm gonna actually look him up because I don't think he had that many matches at all. So this is his last match.
Right.
Prior to this, he did a couple of tours of with 0-1. That was the previous year, so he hadn't even wrestled a wrestling match in 6-7 months. So that kind of explains his conditioning. So I'm guessing he hadn't done anything for 7 months. But yeah, this is his 31st professional wrestling match.
Wow.
I am surprised it's that high.
Yeah, but if you're saying he hasn't wrestled at all that year,
Yeah, well,
I
this is
sort of get.
March, and his last match before that was July.
Yeah, so that's like, what, 8 months or something?
Yeah, it's quite a time. And he was basically tagging then. So I assume he's tagging with his brother, or maybe it was a worked brother. His name was Shifu Gafari, which that sounds fake. That just sounds made up.
Maybe, I don't know, but
Yeah,
the match stunk. This was a waste of time. Hustle 2 was a bad show. Let's never talk about it again.
I okay. We might have to reference back to it a little bit when we talk about Hustle 3. My biggest beef with Hustle 2 is they set up a load of matches at Hustle 1 and then didn't do any of them at Hustle 2. So like that Dusty Carino match was supposed to happen here. It happens on 3, so I don't really know why it doesn't happen on 2. But that didn't happen. They set up Ogawa and Giant Silver. That never happens, as far as I can remember.
Well,
And
they sort of tease it at the end of Hustle 3 as well, don't they?
yeah, they tease it again. It still doesn't happen. And they teased Goldberg and Hashimoto, although I assume they wanted Goldberg for this show as well, and that the main event was supposed to be Goldberg versus Hashimoto.
No, so actually, Goldberg, the Foley Kawada match,
Was
Foley
yeah,
was.
I know that was originally supposed to be Goldberg, not Foley, but I assume that they had him, or they were at the process of trying to get him for this show as well. Otherwise, why do the Hashimoto thing at the end of
I
Hustle One?
said, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
So I assume they tried to get him for 3 shows. So Ogawa on the first show, Hashimoto on the second one, and Kawada on the third, which would make sense because that's their three big baby faces in the company. So like doing them one after another against their big foreign draw would make sense.
Yeah.
Which would also explain why the main event of this show was just bullshit.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. But then, who would you have done Ogawa against on this show? Because he's on every show.
Yeah, who cares? It's Ogawa.
Fair enough.
I mean, they may have intended to do that Gafari match as the Ogawa match all along, and it just the other one fell through.
Or I guess if you don't have Hashimoto and Kawada in that tag, you could have done Ogawa Kawada. I can't talk anymore.
Oh, like have him drop into the Hashimoto spot and have him tag in there. That would make sense as well. Basically, lots of things would make more sense than what happened.
Yeah. I think that's going to be the story of Hustle in general.
Hustle 3 is actually quite good, though.
It's a fun little show. It's quite long, but like, it almost feels like Hustle 2 was a B show and just not even in the canon, because you can watch Hustle 1 and Hustle 3 and not feel like you're missing out on much.
I'm pretty sure I said to you like you don't actually have to watch Hustle 2.
Potentially.
I'm pretty sure I said that. at the, when we were talking about what how the we were going to structure the podcasts, and I was like, yeah, you can pretty much just skip ahead to three. But
you know what? You did, but I wanted to watch that opener because Key Homicide in Japan seems really interesting to me, and it just turned out being nothing.
Well, so that match, they basically redid that match, but they replaced Homicide with Taka Michinoku, and that's how Hustle 3 kicks off. That's a segue.
That's a professional podcaster.
Oh, that's good stuff. And I was really happy about this as well, because we got Taka Michinoku's like sweary entrance music, which is like the best. It's
yeah.
WWF music, but like they add like swears in. It's brilliant.
It's so funny.
It might be in my top five like entrance musics of all time, with like, you know, the Liger and the Mizawa.
Yeah, the match was really good, actually. It legitimately might have been better than most of Hustle 2.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Taka Michinoku, the man legitimately, like, it's become a joke now, but he legitimately doesn't age. It's shocking.
He definitely didn't age. So between his WWF run, which would have been about 7 years before this, and here, he looks like exactly the same guy. Like, he hasn't changed in the slightest. He looks like modern day Taka, who's like 15 years later than this. He's a little bit slower, but he kind of looks the same. Maybe his face is filled out just a little bit.
Yeah, but it's not 15 years worth of aging.
It's not. It really isn't. Masato Tanaka's the same.
Yeah.
And also Minoru Tanaka. And Suzuki looks exactly the same. I was watching New Japan shows from 2004, and he just looks exactly the same now as he did then.
Well, younger Suzuki was a very, very handsome man. He was a hunk.
Mm. But he looks the same.
Basically,
exactly
the
same.
Just less hair.
Whereas you look at Brian Kendrick, the difference between like 2004 Brian Kendrick and modern Brian Kendrick, there is a significant difference, and they really exploited him as a like as a sex symbol on these shows.
Yeah, well, even his name Leonardo Spanky is supposed to be because he looks like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he never used Leonardo anywhere other than Japan. And it was just because he arrived and they just looked at him and went, you look like Leonardo DiCaprio. You're Leonardo Spanky now.
And I mean, he was really, really good in this match. Like, I have a note here that you forget how good he used to be.
He was great. He was great. He's huge over as well. Like, he was massively over.
Yeah, this team, him and Kazayashi, have become a really fun undercard team.
Yeah, Kaz Hayashi's so good.
Yeah, we talked about it on the last show. This era of Kaz Hayashi, he legitimately might be one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
Oh, he's that good.
He's great. So good. He's so smooth. He's so technically gifted. Like, if your only exposure to Kaz Hayashi has been recently when he's a little bit run down, or in WCW, where he was just green. You really need to see some of the stuff in between. Like 2004 onwards, it's great. So good.
Yeah, so that's basically all of him I've seen. Not the WCW stuff. He did a bit of TNA in the early days, I think. Or am I confusing him with someone else?
I'm going to have to look him up because I don't remember him being in there, but I'm going to do a quick look.
I feel like he was on the first pay-per-view as one of the Flying Elvises.
I don't think so.
Okay. In that case, all of the Kaz Hayashi I've really seen is his more recent stuff, where, like, he's still all right, but he's not a super worker or anything.
Yeah, the only TNA stuff I can find is 2014, where he wrestled a couple of matches in 2014, which is when that, TNA had the Wrestle One connection.
Yeah, that must be it. That must be what I'm thinking. Yeah,
I can't see anything else.
Yeah. Right, in that case, I've only seen old Kazayashi, so this is a real revelation for me.
Yeah, no, he's really good. Like, if there's a reason for watching these shows, then it's to see how good some people used to be, which you forget how people change. Some people deteriorate and some people improve, and it's just really weird to see the difference. Like, I talk about New Japan from the same era. Seeing an incomplete Tanahashi is really weird, but also seeing a lot of the guys they had there wrestling as young boys and how they've changed. Like, Taguchi is basically the same, only he's goofier now, but like the in-ring is kind of the same standard, whereas others are not. Like, watching Yano do no comedy is terrible. He's just bad.
Yeah, well, Yano was like a serious wrestler until fairly recently.
I'm not even sure when he kicked into.
When I say fairly recently, I mean within the last like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can put. It feels like he's gotten sillier as well. So like, he definitely transitioned into comedy and then he like went up a level.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's deceptively old, so I'm not surprised. He probably just can't do that much.
But no, I just don't think he was very good to start with.
Fair, okay.
That's my take on Yano. But like, as a comedy wrestler, he is fantastic.
Yes.
Speaking of comedy wrestlers, there are an abundance of them in the second match on Hustle 3.
Yeah.
This is like Mexico in a nutshell, where they have a straight up luchador, a women's wrestler, a mini, and then somebody who has a wacky off the wall gimmick as like the fourth person. And that's your tag. There's two teams.
Yeah, you see a lot of these kind of lucha matches in other promotions as a sort of touring thing. It's called an Atomicos. It's, I believe, please don't correct me if I'm wrong. So you've got the traditional luchador, you've got the Exotico, you've got the mini, and you've got someone else. And like, this was pretty fun.
It's kind of untidy at the start. It didn't really work to start with because they were pairing off the way you'd expect them to pair off. So like, Gran Apache is like your serious luchador. He's teaming up. He's opposite Oscar Severe, and all the stuff they do is like okay. And then it doesn't really pick up until the minis get in there, because the minis are Masquerita Sagrada and Mini Abismo Negro, who are like two of the best in the biz, and their sequence is really fun. And then it switches from pairing up type for type to like Cynthia Moreno going in there with Gran Apache, and then the minis mixing it up with different sized wrestlers. And it got more fun the more they played with the different types that they had in there.
Yeah, I do agree with you there. I think one of my favourite bits of the match, other than just everything Masquerita Sagrada and Mini Abismo Negro did, just every sequence they did was amazing. Sagrada hit a really, really cool like diving Hurricanrana thing to the outside.
Oh, that was over the guardrail as well. It wasn't just to the floor. It was like from the top rope over the guardrail, and then he ran at him like off into the crowd somewhere. He couldn't even see where he landed.
Yeah, and there was a dive sort of like that in Villano 3-5 Junior. I can't pronounce this man's name. Herrero. The Lucha match that's getting a lot of buzz this year, they have a dive similar to that. And it blew my mind then. And to see it done, what, 16 years ago, is just crazy.
That's that Masquerita Sagrada. Like, he really is just outstanding.
It's shocking to me how much WWE fucked him up. Because he's so, so good. And you could have had him in there as like a underdog babyface, and it would have worked perfectly. But you just paired him up with the colons.
Yeah, he's always been great. Like going back to the WWE have used him several times because he's so good. He's so good at what he does, but because he is a mini, they just kind of put him in certain situations and scenarios that you can't make the best of his abilities. Like, he was always great. I feel like this match has, it kind of suffers from the crowd wanting to see the comedy stuff from Pimpinella Escalata and Polvo de Estrellas. So they do bits of that throughout, and it's popping the crowd, and most of it's terrible.
Yeah, it really, really didn't work for me either. It seemed like the only things that the crowd cared about were the Exoticos and Masquerita Sagrada, because there's a moment in this match where Granapachi punches Sagrada or something, and the crowd boo him so, so hard.
Punched Cynthia Moreno and had to apologize. Like, he punched her, and then like he's apologizing to the crowd and doing like a little like hands together pray kind of thing. Oh, forgive me, and then he does it again.
yeah,
I enjoyed that.
It's really, really good. But like the match itself, I agree with you. There's a lot of, I want to say, structural issues with it.
Yeah, that's being polite.
Yeah. But just the energy it brought, the craziness that Masquerita did, this was one of my favourite matches on the show.
Yeah, I like the fact that it really brought the crowd up, and then at the end when the baby face, so the Technicos are celebrating the victory, it just felt like a really fun time. Everyone's enjoying themselves. That's basically what wrestling is about for the most part. Especially undercards, you need those matches on undercards just to kind of get the crowd into being there.
Yeah, and I think all of these people were in AAA at the time, so I'm hoping there's a bit more hustle AAA crossover going forward, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know what the cards are like after the next show, so it's all going to be a surprise to me. It'll be fun.
Exciting.
Yeah. After that, we had our backstage stuff. And I messaged you when I was watching this going, like, I can't wait for you to see this stuff.
It was so weird.
Yeah. Well, I loved the... So Mick Foley, to his credit, Mick Foley will sell anything. Like, he'll turn up and he'll do the best job that he can trying to sell the gimmick, trying to sell the what he's involved in. So he comes into this backstage segment with, keep in mind, like, he's done a load of press to promote this, and he's done some real like serious promos about Toshiaki Kawada, and how they interviewed them both at a press conference, and Kawada basically said he just didn't remember Mick Foley at all. And this is after Foley had a run in All Japan in the early 90s wrestled in Champion Carnival, actually wrestled against Kawada, got beaten in 7 minutes. But like Kawada's like, hey, I don't remember this guy. And Foley's like throwing tables around, pulling out this barbed wire bat and smashing stuff up and going, oh, you're gonna remember me now. Like the hype for it was so good.
Well, this is, they have a Triple Crown title match, and like in this era, the Triple Crown was a big, big deal.
Yeah. Really was. And this is right after Foley's come out of retirement in WWE and had that match with Randy Orton, the one that basically made Orton. That was
two weeks before this. That's crazy. But the actual segment itself, Foley was really good, just sort of having it up, talking about how he had a special surprise for Kawada even. And then my favorite bit, who was the guy that was with Takada? Generalissimo Takada even. There was some guy next to him.
Oh, the translator.
And he just goes to, yeah. And he goes,
what's his name? Shimada? Yuji okay. Shimada, that's the, I think it's him. He basically has a translator doing work for him because his English is not very good. That's Generalissimo Takada.
Yeah, and so the translator goes to Foley, I've got this written down. Are you monster? Are you monster? Are you monster? And then Foley goes, I am monster. Are you monster? And they go back and forth like this for a couple of minutes. And then Foley goes, we are monster. And then they go, do the hustle. And I loved it so much.
Is that weird? Like, because Mick decides he's got an idea and kind of whispers it into like Shimada's ear. And they do like a pose together and go like, we are monster, we are monster, we are monster, do the hustle. Bang, bang. And they do like, yes. The whole Cactus Jack finger guns thing, which is perfect.
Yeah, so the We Are Monster thing ends up being a recurring thing. But at the time, I think this was the first time they'd done it. And it honestly brought tears to my eyes.
It's
I felt like in that moment we were all monster.
We are all monster.
We are all monster. And then Kawada kicks Tai Chi for some reason.
Well, he's warming up. So like Kawada feels he needs a little bit of kicking practice on a live target. And like Tai Chi was his young boy at the time. Like the one that he was training to be basically future Kawada. And Tai Chi is there. And Kawada gives him like a little soft kick in the back of the leg. And like Taichi's like, oh, that's good, boss. It hurts a little bit. And then Kawada like kicks him properly and he's down.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was no We Are Monster, but it got the job done.
Yeah, it was so good. They should have done it the other way around, because like how can you top the Foley stuff?
Then after that, I think we had the Dusty Carino match, which I hate it so much.
It's so bad.
The thing is, they tried to have, first of all, this is the match where I realized Carino's whole entrance gear is basically Hashimoto. He's just dressed up as Hashimoto. Mm. And like, I've seen him wear that before, and I just never, for some reason, it never clicked in my head. But he's literally just dressed up as Hashimoto.
A lot of his Japanese run involves him mocking Japanese wrestlers or imitating them.
Right.
A lot of it. Whereas his American run involves him mocking and imitating like Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, so it sort of tracks, I guess. But the match itself, they try to have like an old NWA blood brawl. And it just doesn't work. The crowd doesn't care. Dusty can barely move. Mm.
Yeah, Dusty was in a really rough way at this point in his career. He really shouldn't have been wrestling. With the level of creativity he had, somebody should have just pulled him to one side and go, can you book our shows? TNA in particular should have done that.
Yeah, I see. I feel like he was vaguely involved in TNA booking around this time,
I believe so. Well, he
but
signed for TNA just after this. So it kind of fucked up the plans that they had for him because this was supposed to be like a they get it out of their system thing with Carino and Dusty where they fight each other and then they're a tag team again. So they kind of had them later on in this show. They come back together and they're a tag team again. But that never happens because Dusty signed for TNA.
oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I was quite interested to see, because later on in the show, like you said, there's a big angle involving Zebra Man. And Zebra Man is the one that can bring Dusty and Carino back together. And it does seem like they're heading towards being a tag team again.
Yeah,
And
no, this is it. Dusty's done at this point.
I was interested in seeing that team again just because. You know, there's an interesting dynamic there, but it's a shame we never really got it.
Yeah, we're not going to get that done. I'm not particularly bothered about not seeing any more like Dusty Rhodes wrestling from around this time because let's face it, he was rotten at this point. Absolutely rotten.
Yeah, it's. Do we still get Karina?
Oh, Carino keeps on going, yeah. He's on like every
Yeah.
show.
Yeah. Because, okay, because he worked a lot of 01 around this time, and Hustle really seems like a 01.
Yeah, it's basically a spin-off of
Yeah,
01.
that's the word.
Yeah, so Carino will be around for like 2 years. So
Oh,
we've
sweet.
got a couple of years of Carino stuff.
Sweet. Well, this was the match where I realized that maybe you're right, maybe Carino does suck. So, that's exciting.
Not so much that he outright sucks, it's that he has a place on the card
Yeah.
and it's not at the top.
No. Or if it is at the top, it's for very specific matches under very specific circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. He can do storylines and do feuds, but if this is what he was going to do with Dusty over a period of time, then I'm rather just kind of stopped at this point because it was either the serious stuff was a complete misfire, and then the comedy stuff that he threw in there was pointless, so it just none of it worked. It just didn't work. It's just bad.
Yeah, after this, we've got another absolute highlight of the show.
This is my
And
favorite. This is my favorite bit of the entire show.
yeah, so Hashimoto is backstage. He's having a chat with Zebra Man. Zebra Man seems sort of, down in the dumps. He got squashed on the last show. He knows himself. He's not where he used to be. And then he starts daydreaming about the time he went to the zoo. And he teleports into the zoo and he shouts at a rhino for some reason.
I don't know if he's trying to find suitable opponents from the animal kingdom. I
That
don't.
would make sense. Oh my God, that makes complete sense because he looks longingly at some zebras for a while
Yeah, he's
and
looking for a
you
tag team
can,
partner.
yeah, exactly. But you can also tell he misses zebras. He misses being with his people. And, I feel sympathy for him. There's real pathos in that one scene. And then he angrily watches some tigers for a bit.
That's the natural enemy
And
of the zebra.
yes. And then the cameraman shouts at him, "Zebra Man, what are you doing?" And he turns around and you can see there's real anger in Zebra Man's face. He's upset that this tiger is here. And then we fade to black. And then we have Zebra Man versus Tiger Jeet Singh.
It's high art, I tell you.
It's magnificent.
It's a shame they couldn't have got a better wrestler with the name Tiger, because Tiger Jeet Singh is legitimately one of the worst wrestlers of all time.
It turns out I've had been confusing Tiger Jeet Singh and Tiger Ali Singh this whole
Yes.
time. I thought they were the same person.
No. Tiger Ali Singh is the son of Tiger Jeet Singh. Tiger Jeet Singh had a an enormously long run in Japan that lasted like 30 years, where he was basically over because people were terrified of him, and he used to run into the crowd with like a fake sword and try and kill people.
Yeah, I mean, the best part of this match was when Taikajit Singh ran out with a sword and tried to decapitate people. That was fun. And Sabu was there for some reason that's never really explained.
Shared heritage, I guess? I don't know.
I assume so. And then during the match, Taikajit Singh is ripping the mask of Zebra Man because, really, Taikajit Singh is Lucha in its purest form.
The worst part of Lucha, I don't...
Yeah. But yeah, no, this match sucked.
Do you know how long it had been since Taikajit Singh had wrestled? Because this is quite a big surprise that he came out.
I looked it up. I'm going to say around 20 years.
Seven. But like, nevertheless, that's a long time. Like, he'd been out of wrestling for a long, long time, and he had no business being in a wrestling ring at this point. No business.
Yeah, it's weird to me that he even won this match. But if you're saying he was sort of he worked Japan a lot, whether or not he was a big star in Japan.
Yeah, I know he was there for a very long time. I mean, we're talking a very long time. So, when New Japan started, he was there. So we're talking proper old school. And he was in New Japan. He was in All Japan. So everyone knows who he is. And he was there for a long time as a big star, pretty much until the 90s. So you're looking at the best part of 20 years. But he had retired. Right. So he retired in 1997, and he came out of retirement for this. Hustle are the only promotion that used him. But he wrestles for Hustle up until like 2009. Yeah.
That's like most of the original run, isn't it?
He's not there all the time, but he's in and out. So that's something to look forward to. But he is the worst. If he's not my least favourite wrestler of all time, he's definitely in the conversation. He stinks.
Yeah, this really felt like just, hey, we've got this guy. He's a big star. Let's have him squash this guy we don't care about anymore.
Yeah, I feel bad for Zebra Man.
Yeah, I mean...
sad.
He doesn't do the gimmick after this, really. There's a couple matches he does in 0-1, and then he sort of goes back to his old shooty gimmick.
Yeah, it's a shame. I will miss him.
Yeah, it's the end of an era.
It's very quick that we got to the end of an era in Hustle. Like, this is the second podcast we've done about it, and it's already the end of the first era, the Zebra Man era.
You know... the brightest stars don't shine the longest or something. There's another L. Ron Hubbard advert on this show. I'm so confused. Anyway,
we've already talked about Riki Choshi's match.
It was
a squash. And it was a comedy match, but nobody knew. That, like, he didn't know it was a comedy match. That's the deal. And King Adamo, who you're quite fond of, basically doesn't wrestle for Hustle again after this, so that was the end of him.
Yeah, he was another guy that was funny at first, but I don't want to watch him wrestle anymore.
Yeah.
So I've got written for this match is that it was a boring squash, but now sort of understanding what it's supposed to be. It still sucks, but at least I understand what they're going for.
And we have another excellent backstage segment to talk about.
Yeah, Dashwood Hall are there for some reason.
Yeah.
And they come in with two random women who are never...
I don't really know what that's about. My favourite part of this is when they're asking about who they're wrestling, and they say it's Agarra and Hashimoto, and I think it's Nashko. It's one of them says who, and the translator's like pork and chicken, and Kevin Nash's fake laugh on hearing pork and chicken is the best thing.
So yeah, it was beautiful. Good.
What a worker.
It was a beautiful moment. This was during when Nash was in TNA. I think this is just before the paparazzi production stuff. So this is Nash at his purest form. And so much fun. Yeah, they call Hashimoto and Ogawa pork and chicken. They laugh about that for a good 5 minutes, it feels like.
It wasn't just the laughing, funniest... it's the way they laughed. It's yeah. Like Kevin Nash was proper channeling like an anime villain.
It's really the funniest joke they've ever heard. And then they do the hustle, they pick up the women and just sort of walk away.
It's so good. But if you're going to use people on these shows, then use people who are proper sellouts who know how to do it. Because they really sold out properly here. They just invested completely in the stupidity and just rolled with it. Perfect use of Gaijin.
I mean, Foley and Kawada is the match on this show that's talked about as being so weird. But to me, Hall and Nash being on the show is even weirder.
I think the Kawada match gets talked about more because it's a Triple Crown match. So it's like, surreal, but it's also so much more surreal because it's for the All Japan Triple Crown.
Yeah, I can buy that. I can buy that.
Okay. Next match was Dan Bobbish and Mark Coleman against Shinjiro Otani and Wataru Sakata. And I hope you like Wataru Sakata because you're going to be seeing a lot of it.
I was going to ask, I don't know who Wataru Sakata is.
Well, he got pushed in one promotion.
Was it Hustle?
It was Hustle.
Great.
Yeah. So basically his career was, up to this point, he was in 0-1. And then from this point onwards, he was like in Hustle.
Right.
That's it. Like his main bulk of his career is Hustle. He didn't really wrestle anywhere else. He is like the Hustle ace, to the point where when Hustle closed its doors, he started his own promotion called Hustle Man's World.
Wow.
So he is Mr. Hustle. Like he is the personification of Hustle, the promotion, Wataru Sakata, which is weird because like he's in this match and he's treated as like they headhunted him for Monster Army before this show. So there's clips of him being headhunted, and then he's on this show and he just gets like beaten. Just gets tapped out by Mark Coleman. I was like, okay. It's almost like I expected him to never appear again based on that, but no. This is how they debut their ace.
Oh, it's a big redemption story, you know? Yeah, this match sucked. I was upset that they didn't bring back Kevin Randleman because he's the only one of these Pride lads which are any good.
Mm. I like Mark Coleman.
Coleman's fine, but he's not good enough to be there. Sorry, he's not good enough to counteract the fact that Dan Bobbish isn't here.
Yeah, I mean he's carrying him as a tag team in this. For the most part.
Whereas Randleman and Coleman like could legitimately be quite a fun tag team.
Yeah. Well, I found it weird that they were so gifted, but they didn't really want to do it. It was just something that they did, but they were good at it. The amount of people that have gone from MMA into wrestling and made a career of it who just were crap is staggering when you look at people who were really good who just couldn't, they just weren't interested in doing it. It's weird. Randleman especially is weird.
Yeah.
He never made a career out of pro wrestling.
We talked about Randleman quite a bit on the last show, I remember.
Yeah.
I think with this Hustle run we've seen most of his career, and it is a real shame that he didn't do anything more, but that's how it works out, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, Coleman is odd as well, because he effectively just wrestled for Hustle from this point onwards. And later in his career, he was in the Inoki Genome Federation, the IGF, which is a very strange promotion, because they'd have like half the show would be shoot fights and half of them would be worked, but in a shoot style.
Yeah, I remember they had a bit of a relaunch a couple of years ago with the IGF NEW, and I watched a couple of those shows and I quite enjoyed it, to be honest, but it's not like it's not something I want to watch regularly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy that there were worked fights. They should have just left it all as shoots. I'd have quite happily watched a bunch of guys I knew as wrestlers just in shoots.
Or just have go completely one way or the other, I would say. Either be a completely worked promotion doing shoot style, or do just shoot fights with workers. But that sort of middle ground, I think.
Well, they did both, which it confused me.
Yeah.
So what are you? You're one or the other, or both? What?
Well, I think a lot of Japanese MMA promotions in this sort of era and earlier were doing similar things, where you'd have a bunch of shoot fights and then and then a bunch of worked fights, and it was difficult to say which was which.
I'd just rather see the shoots, to be honest. That I'd like a project where I'd watch like wrestlers having shoot fights. That would be a good project for me. I'd enjoy that.
Yeah, well, there's the famous one with Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah.
Head kicked off by Crocor.
Yeah. I may have seen that a few times.
Yeah, it's great. After that, we had another FMW offer match.
Oh, yeah. The Dynamite Hardcore Hustle 6-man tag team weapons match.
Yes, that one. Which I think these end up becoming a staple of the promotion. They even bring in.
I just noticed we skipped over Joe Sun, but we'll come back to him.
I don't remember that.
We have to come back to Joe Sun. But we'll talk about this first.
Sure. Well, these sort of matches end up becoming a staple of Hustle because they bring in a hardcore 6-man title at some point as well. This was it's very similar to the one from Hustle 2. It was a bit more fun because you had it was almost like the DDT Weapons Rumble, where every couple of minutes.
I love that basically there's various stages of the match, and every now and again they introduce a new weapon. So the Thunderbirds 5 kicks in. And then like when the Thunderbirds 5-4-3-2-1 is completed, out comes a new weapon. And what was the first? I remember the second one was a bicycle.
And the first one was an exploding guitar.
Yeah. So there's a guitar, there's a bicycle, and when the bicycle is introduced, there's like a bell sound over the PA system.
It was wonderful. It was great. It was great because there's a spotlight on the bike as well. There's a little ding-ding.
It was so good.
Phenomenal stuff. And then Giant Silver comes out at one point.
Yeah, there was a trash can. Then Giant Silver is like the fourth and final weapon. And I'm not convinced he was understanding what he was supposed to do as a weapon. He just kind of throws people around. It's a good use of Giant Silver, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess. Although, like you said, he didn't really know what he was doing. So it's not that great of a use.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed this match.
Yeah.
Even though they kind of fucked the finish up because The finish is supposed to be a powerbomb off the top rope through a table, and it's Mike Awesome up top, and Tomoaki Honma is the poor bastard who's got to take the spot, and he just kind of slips out of the position for it and falls off the top rope, and Awesome's like stood at the top rope still, going, oh dear, and it's Kanemaru, I think, has to like put him back up there, so like Kanemaru picks Honma back up, repositions him, and then. Awesome does a power bomb, but it's onto one of those Japanese tables, and like there's not enough weight on it, it just doesn't break properly. It looked really painful, like both spots look really painful. I felt bad for
I did as well, but earlier in the match, Honma did like a hurricane rana onto Kanemaru and the table didn't break. So
Honma. Oh, God, yes.
it was almost karma.
It's not even that it didn't break, it was that the landing on it, like the table was lengthways and you overshot it and landed on the back end of the table on the legs. So like the tiny little bit at the end of the table broke, but then he landed spine first onto like the leg part and it just didn't move. So like his ass broke the end of the table and his spine broke his fall.
I was really surprised Kanemaru even came back into the match after that. I thought
Yeah.
that was the end of him.
It was not a good good spot. I feel bad for him.
Nice.
He because that's basically his career is taking spots like that. When he has such natural rhythm and ability to come out there to Offspring music and dance, like he could have made a career out of
Yes. Yes, you could have. So what is this Joe-san thing? I
Oh,
don't
God.
remember this
Okay,
at all.
so. In between the tag with Otani and Sakata and the weapons rumble thing, there is a segment where Joe-sun, who is a noted MMA fighter, comes out and sings wearing a thong. He basically comes out and strips down to a thong and then he's
Right.
singing. That's just weird. Like, so my first introduction to Joe-sun was he was at UFC 4 and he came out with like a crucifix on his back, like Christ going to be crucified.
Right.
And he fought Keith Hackney, who was basically like a karate guy, and the finish was like Keith Hackney's like got him down on the deck. And he's trying to fight off his own submission, so he decides the ideal way to make sure that Joe-sun doesn't get at him is to punch him repeatedly in the groin, because at the
Jeez.
time early UFC was like a wild west of MMA, and like there were very few rules, so like punches to the groin were accepted, it was fine. So yeah, he just repeatedly hit him in the balls until he quits. So that was my first
Oh,
exposure to
God.
Joe-sun. My second exposure to him was Austin Powers. He was Random Task, the odd job style character in Austin Powers.
Yeah, I remember
That's
that.
that was Joe-sun as well.
Okay.
So that's basically the highlights of his career. My third exposure to him was here at Hustle. Being mostly naked and singing, which was kind of funny at the time because it wasn't like an MMA guy and like he was this badass, but like here he is stripping. So he has had an interesting life since then. I basically said to you, don't read up on him so I can gauge your reactions on telling you what happens.
Sure.
So, flash forward to 2008, and Joe-sun
Okay.
gets arrested for vandalism.
Sure.
So he gets 60 days in jail, but as part of his plea agreement, he has to provide a DNA sample. And when they test his DNA sample, they find out that he was involved in a gang rape in 1990.
Oh. Okay.
So they go to charge him with it and then realize statute of limitations means you can't charge someone for rape after like 28 years. It's not a done thing because, like, if you don't catch the villain within a certain amount of time, you can't convict them of the offense. It's America, it's fucked up. But what they can charge him with, based on how horrible this, I basically read into it, it's the him and another guy basically took a woman off the street when she was walking a dog, and then just raped and beat her for hours on end, and then let her go because it was Christmas Eve.
Okay.
So what they can charge him with is, what did they charge him with? Is it kidnap? No, torture. So they right. charged him with torture, and he got charged for that and got sentenced to 17 years? No, that's the other guy. The other guy got 17 years. Joe Sung got 7 years in jail.
Is that it?
That was in 2011. So when he was sentenced, he was given 7 years in jail to life. Because it's basically a minimum of 7 years, but he might serve 25 based on American courts, because I don't understand them. However, he's still in jail because he killed his cellmate.
Jesus.
Because they put him, because he's a rapist, they put him in a sex offender wing. And
sure.
his cellmate was a guy called Michael Thomas Graham, who was a paedophile. And right. he... Apparently, Chosun had told the guards, like, you've got to get me out of here. I'm going to do something if you leave me in here. And obviously, he's a professional fighter. If he feels like he can kill a paedophile that he's in a cell with, he's just going to do it. So he killed the paedophile and got charged for it. And now he's got a minimum of 27 years.
That's wild. Jeez.
So that was him singing in a thong. That's where his life has gone since then.
Oh, wow. So when this show happened...
So this show is 2004. He had done the thing. So basically his career is... pretty much down the toilet at this point. He had 4 MMA fights, lost all of them. He just wasn't doing anything. So they basically just used him as a singer because he had no other value. They just thought it'd be funny to have him come out and do that.
Right. But... Sorry. So, but in 2004, he had convicted the rape, but he hadn't been caught yet.
Correct. So he had raped this woman in 1990.
Wow.
So at this point, he's probably thinking he's gotten away with that. That's never going to come back to haunt him.
Yeah, and then just 4 years later.
And then, yeah, shit hit the fan when he just got busted for something else, for vandalism. And jeez. That led to him murdering a paedophile.
That's craziness.
Yeah. I thought you might like that. That's it's an odd story. And the problem with a lot of MMA fighters or wrestlers is they can get themselves into awkward situations based on their strength and capacity to fight. And the Dark Side of the Ring documentary series has an enormous amount of material just because wrestlers.
I don't even know how we transition into the next match.
Let's just go and talk about Kawada and Foley, because you can't. There's no transitioning.
Yeah. Okay. So with Kawan and Foley, it's a really funny match on paper. I see what they were sort of trying to do. Because Foley, this was 2004, he couldn't really do much athletically. It was sort of built around his barbed wire bat.
Well, they do a bit right at the start where Foley basically gets the microphone and says he doesn't need a barbed wire bat. He's going to beat him with good old-fashioned professional wrestling. That's right at the start. And then, obviously, they have him as a heel in the match. So, like, as it progresses, he's like, you know, screw this. I'm just going to use the bat anyway. So the story is that, like, he tries to out-wrestle Kawada, but he can't because he's not as good as Kawada. And then he gets frustrated and goes for the garbage stuff that Kawada historically is not fond of.
I can imagine.
He is very, very anti-garbage wrestling.
I'm not at all surprised. The sort of back and forth before Foley brings in the weapons was really, really boring. It was all very basic stuff. Foley quickly brings in the barbed wire bat. You have this whole portion built around him trying to use the barbed wire bat, Kawada trying to avoid it. That goes on for a while. And then I don't remember how they got rid of the bat.
I think Kawada just picks it up and throws it away.
Yeah, that sounds right. And then it's just a normal match again for a little bit. The highlight of the whole thing for me is at one point Foley is down on the mat and Kawada just stamps on his head.
The highlight for me was the point where it, like, with the whole barbed wire bat thing, it's like, I don't think he can piss Kawada off anymore at this point. Like, it doesn't matter what he does. I don't think he can get more annoyed than when he saw that bat come out. And then comes Mr. Socko.
Yeah, I forgot about Mr. Socko.
And you see Kawada looking at this sock and going, like, I don't want to take this spot. Just, no, I'm not going to take this spot. And he has to, because it's, like, right before the finish. So he lets his bottom lip come down a little bit just so the sock can be there in place. And then he pushes him away as quickly as he can. He's so disgusted with it happening. And you see what I mean about hustle, like, mocking people who take themselves too seriously? That would be that.
Yeah, well, Kawada, I know, ends up getting a bit more wacky as things go on. But at this point, he was still real wrestler Kawada, and I think the ending portion of this match was quite good, leading up to the finish. But as a whole match, it's a mesh of styles in the bad way where it doesn't really work.
They just didn't click.
There's
one point where Kawada is on the he's in the middle of the ring. And Foley's on the ropes. And Foley's, like, beckoning him to come in. Like, he literally communicating with him as you would do during a match. And he's not having it. He's just not coming in. And he starts talking to him in the ring, going, like, you come. No. He's not having it. So, like, there's literally a breakdown in the match where Kawada just doesn't want to do what Mick wants to do. When you have that in front of people, it's horrible.
Yeah, you would think they would have, like, worked this out a bit more before going out into the ring.
Yeah, I think as the match progressed, Kawada just got more annoyed with what he was having to do and just decided to nix a few spots on the fly.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fine match. But it's more just, it's funny that it happened than anything else.
Yeah, it happening was a thing, but, like, actually seeing the match, there's not a lot to write home about.
No.
I kind of enjoyed it, though. I enjoyed it as a curio.
Yeah, like, I mean, star ratings-wise, I've got it at, like, 3, 3.25.
Yeah,
so, like, it was a good match, but nothing more than that.
Yeah.
And then I think we've got the main event.
The main event, the Outsiders against Shinya Hashimoto and Noya Agawa.
Yeah. The good thing I can say about this match is that Agawa didn't work a lot of it.
I just didn't think it was very good as a match.
Yeah, I mean, this is late era Hall where he can't do anything. This is Nash where he doesn't want to do anything. So it's just a lot of shtick with Hashimoto making fun of him.
There's a lot of very big facial reactions from the Outsiders in this. They're just playing pantomime villains. And they have a heel referee as well.
Yeah, it's what I'm finding with Hustle Main Events is they're really going after the sort of overbooked Attitude Era style matches. And I think those sort of matches worked when you had people like Austin and Rock who are super duper over and the crowd is really, really into it. And I find with these main events, because Ogawa's not really that over, the crowd doesn't really care that much, and losing that energy just makes it all seem really uninteresting, and you can see the seams of everything, you know?
I didn't like the Attitude main events for the most part. It's only every now and again you get one that was really well booked and really well put together, and a lot of it was just boring. And that's what you've got here. It just wasn't very good, which is sad because I really enjoyed the show, but like at the tail end here, it just isn't good.
It sort of fizzles out. I think people have started to revisit the Attitude Era with more critical eyes as opposed to looking at it through nostalgic eyes. And a lot of the sort of hyped main events or hyped angles are getting, they're not as good as people thought they were at the time. But
there's so when Foley wrestled Austin, I can't remember when it was, but they had a Falls Count Anywhere deal going on, and the match kind of changed on the fly as it was going on. That was really well booked, but it also relied on the effort of those involved. So like peak Austin, peak Foley, it's like it's a winner. Whereas a lot of the other matches involved wrestlers who weren't at the peak of their powers, whether that was maybe it was too early for The Rock being in those spots that he was in, or whether it was The Undertaker, who was badly injured at the time and completely immobile. They just didn't have very good matches. So,
yeah.
There was that one match with Foley that was great, and I don't think they followed up on it at any point.
Yeah, and these Hustle Main Events are in that template but you're taking away even the slight chance of someone at the peak of their powers.
Yeah, I mean, Hashimoto doesn't look good in 2004. He's not in good condition. He still had good matches in him, but they were few and far between. Agawa was too green, and the Outsiders were both past it. So you've got three guys who are over the hill, one of which has a little bit left, and one guy who's not ready. So it's you can't really do anything complex. And the finish here was complex. So they tried to do like a double team STO on Nash with the Hashimoto sweeping the legs. It's like almost a version of total elimination. I'm like, there's no way Nash is taking that spot.
Yeah. It looked really awkward. The whole match just a bit of a waste of time, to be honest.
Yeah, they could have done everything in like 4 minutes and just gone home. That'd have been fine.
This wasn't even that long. It was like 10 minutes, I want to say.
It was 7.5.
Wow.
Holy shit. Wow. I thought it was a lot longer than that. I thought it was about 12, 13 minutes.
Yeah.
7.5. Wow. That's a long 7.5.
Especially considering most of it was just stalling and shtick.
Yeah. Wow, that's bad.
Yeah. But yeah, Hustle 3 as an overall show was really, really fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed
it. It's just those last two matches. It's those last two matches sort of ended it with a whimper.
Yeah, I mean, Kawhi Cole is not even that bad, but if you'd ended the show there, I would have had no problems with it. I thought the Outsiders were at their best in a promo package, and you probably didn't need the match.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Foley Kawhi was actually, you're right, it was not bad. It was just a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, it should have been great. Like, if Kawhi wanted it to, it could have been great.
Potentially, yeah. I think with a lot of these Hustle shows, we're going to end the conversation in the same way. It's a shame they're building around Ogawa because he sucks. And
well,
to be frank, he sucks.
So the next show that we've got is Hustle House Volume 1, which is this is the smaller shows that they ran. So that's at Corican Hall. And you've got Noah Gower on the show, no Hashimoto, and it's Kawada and Sakata tagging as the main event. Hashimoto is on the show. He's in the semi-main. But there are some different things going on, so that'll be interesting to see. And then we're going to go to Hustle 4. The main event for Hustle 4 is Ogawa and Choshu against Anjo and Dan Bobish. So...
okay. That sounds fun.
Some of the people on the show, Sanjay Dutt is on the show. Okay. We've got Ishii's making another appearance. Honma's also on the show. Super Crazy.
Ooh.
Super Crazy's on it. Psycho the Deaf.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah. Garma King.
Ooh.
Is on Hustle 4. So, yeah, we've got some exciting stuff to look forward to. And the Flying Vampires.
Yeah, I saw them on the... I haven't looked at the Hustle 4 card yet. I've looked at Hustle House. And they're all over the Hustle House shows. So I hope they're at least funny.
From what I remember, they're masked and they just do cruiserweight stuff.
Okay, I'm into that.
From what I remember, because I have seen at least one of them wrestle. They've got really random numbers as well.
Is it always the same?
So Hustle House Volume 1, it is Flying Vampire 16 and Flying Vampire 23.
Okay.
And Hustle House 4, Hustle 4, Flying Vampire 7 is in a six-man hardcore Royal Rumble match.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so I'm excited about that.
But do we know if it's different people under the masks every time?
I have no idea. I don't know.
I think we should have a side project trying to figure out
who they are. Yeah, I don't know who they are. So that's next time we're gonna look at those.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. That's the end of this. I've got nothing else to say about Hustle 2 or 3.
Do the hustle. You know, they've got a second hustle dance that we didn't even talk about. So the heels do the hustle.
Yeah.
And the faces have their own dance where they just go hustle, 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 yes. And thrust.
The thrust is all important.
Yeah, it's the key part of the whole thing.